Welcome to the Java.net Community Corner podcast series for Java 1 2007. In this series of podcasts, we bring you the activity of the Community Corner, located at booth 408 on the Java 1 Pavilion floor, including mini talks about projects hosted on Java.net and other community activities.
Good afternoon, folks. It is 2 o'clock at the Community Corner in the Mini Talks Theater. And it is now time for Simran Gleason's presentation. He'll be speaking about Kepler's Orrery, Generative Music of the Planets. Simran?
Okay. Kepler's Orrery is a generative music system that uses physics equations to make music. It basically runs an n-body simulator. You can see right now there's a few worlds up there, and they're mutually attracting each other and moving around. And then when the worlds collide, they make music. So you can see right now they're sort of just kind of careening around. I'll restart that. I don't know if you're familiar with n-body simulation, which is the n-body problem, which is where, given n bodies with mass, position, velocity, how do you predict where they're going to be? You can't solve it algebraically, so they solve it by simulators. And basically at each step, you calculate the force to each thing, where it's going to go, and you move each one. So I thought, okay, let's make music out of that. So what I did was make it so that when the worlds collide, they play notes. Okay. So here's a real simple world. You can see them moving around, sort of bouncing off each other. You can hear the melody develop as the notes, as the bodies hit. One thing that's really interesting is if I start that again, it'll play the exact same thing because it's a simulator. Right. So we'll start the same thing, same initial conditions. It does the same thing. It actually plays the same song. So how do I make the music? Basically, every time a ball collides, it's got a melody attached to it. It plays the next note in its melody. All right. So for each individual body there, you have control of what gets played when, but you don't have control of how it's played in relation to the other things. Because it's sort of, from a composer's point of view, random. It just doesn't, you can't... So it's from a composition point of view, throw out rhythm, throw out a coherent sense of melody, throw out timing, what do you have left? All right, I'm going to get to how do you compose with that in a second. It does play the same each time, but you can add randomness to it. So I've added little things that are mutators. You'll see some of these have little rings inside them. This one up here, the little ball does, and this one down here. Every time something hits it, it changes its mass. So it's going to come out different, because just a very slight change in the mass is going to make the simulation come out completely different. And your melody is going to be very different. So here's some interesting quirks of the algorithm. Look at this one over here. It's actually trapped outside the world. The universe here has a semi-permeable membrane. So my algorithm for that is if a ball finds itself outside the universe, all right, it reflects its velocity vector off the normal vector of the universe, because we're in a normal universe, and comes back. But there's friction in the world, at least as I've implemented it. So it might bounce out and then bounce back, but not quite make it because the friction has slowed it down. It says, oh, I'm outside the universe, I'll bounce back out. And it comes back out again. And it kind of bounces along until the friction slows it down and brings it in. Okay, friction is not a physical construct. It doesn't exist, there's no ether in the world. So there's no ether friction. But what happens is, you'll notice that sometimes these will shoot very far off. This is a discrete simulation using a discrete Euler's method. And one thing that's known about those algorithms is they don't conserve momentum. Here's why. Let's turn trails on and you'll see what's going on. You can see every little cycle step there, and sometimes they go a bit of a distance when they're, you know, between each step. If on that step it gets really close to another mass, okay, gravity's the inverse square law. The inverse square of a very small distance is a huge amount of energy that gets imparted to it. So these systems gain momentum and they gain energy over time. So I implemented friction in to slow it down. You know, my goal here isn't accurate physical simulation, it's how do I make interesting music out of this? Okay, so let's look at a couple other kinds of mutators I've added to make the world interesting. So the one in the center, when a body hits it, it will split into two. So it's a cloner. So if you can see that, with some chance, it'll split into two. So there you've got two balls going around. These ones on the radar are like black holes. They'll eat whatever hits it. So in this one, it's kind of always a toss-up between sometimes the world completely gets rid of bodies. Sometimes they proliferate and there's a zillion of them. I'll run this one again. Sometimes I have to run this a few times to get anything at all. Oops, I went to the next world instead of restarting it. I hit the wrong key. In this one, the mutators, everyone's a mutator, and it makes all the balls, all the masses smaller each time. So they start off with a lot of mass and a lot of energy, and then it kind of, everything shrinks until they kind of disappear, and which adds a lot of randomness to the system. The what? Okay. When I reduce the mass, I'll reduce the size of it. And if they get to be one pixel in size, there was a bug in the drawing algorithm where I drew it on the background instead of the foreground, and I liked the look of it so much, I declared it was a feature. Well, to really be a feature, you'd have a key to toggle it on and off, kind of like you can toggle trails for everything. So you can see where they go. And what's kind of neat is when you can see them interacting here, like these ones are sort of twining around each other. It's really kind of neat. Okay. So let's talk about how you make music with this thing. A couple of different strategies. What I've done is I've completely thrown out any notion of rhythm, any notion of coherent melody. A couple of things you could do. Here's one where I have a real simple melody on top of kind of a drone layer. So the drone layer is basically an A minor chord, and a real simple melody on top of it, basically F, D, C, A, F, sort of meanders around a little bit. Later on, there's another element with a second melody that kind of meanders around, but you can hear that if you stay simple, a couple little plinky sounds over the top of a nice drone, it works well. This one I tuned so that the gravities balance each other out as much as possible, and only barely do you hear them, do they finally hit. I don't know if you could hear that one. This is a quiet world. So that's an example of just a real simple melody on top of, on top of some drones, on top of a harmonic structure. Okay, another thing I've found that sometimes you can exploit the fact that it always starts the same. And so I did one world where it starts symmetrically and they all hit over and over again. And so I exploited that and made it do a series of chords right in the beginning. So it does the initial series of chords, and I made it a sort of a dramatic, kind of almost, tension movie set of chords. It's a G minor 7, F, E, E flat, and then F minor 6 for the musically inclined. You'll see they're all symmetric. The one in the center starts with no velocity. It's actually held in place by the symmetric gravitational forces. And you'll see that since it's symmetric, it keeps oscillating. And it'll keep doing that until the rounding errors kick in. And then it's, you know, off by a little bit, and now it's completely chaotic. All right, you play that again, you get the same set of chords. Another thing you can do, and this is kind of where I've spent a lot of time composing for randomness, is a, sort of a more generalized approach where you take a set of chords, real simple chords that by themselves are fairly simple, but when you put them together, they start to make more complex chords. So this is a case where I have essentially three different chords interacting with each other, all to make fairly complex harmonies. But I don't know exactly when they're going to hit, so the chords are made up sort of over time. All right. What have I got in this one? I've got a G minor 7, I've got a D minor 6, and a B flat 7. Originally, this one I intended to try and make Philip Glass music with it. He does a lot of work where you have these arpeggios with another one coming all mixing together. And I actually worked this one out on a software sequencer where I had those going all on the pianos and they sounded really good together. So I put them on this thinking, okay, maybe I'll get some of that. Nothing at all like it, because that kind of music really depends on the rhythmic, you know, arpeggio to drive it along. Instead, I got this, which, when I had everything going on the pianos and the plinky stuff, didn't sound very good, but I put a couple of them on the strings, and I made some of the arpeggios high and some of them low, so there's a little space between them. So you can hear things with that. This next world actually uses the same melodies, but a completely different world, and it uses different instruments. So this has kind of more new age, sort of, you know, synthesizer pad type of instruments going along. But it actually uses the same melodies. And you'll hear how it's very, very different. There's four balls in there, and they start off symmetric. Symmetric because they start all in the same place, then it gets chaotic after the rounding errors kick in. There's one mutator in this at the very center, so it's never going to come out completely the same. But it turns out that it always starts the same and then goes on. Okay, one more strategy I'll talk about before we start modifying some worlds and see how this stuff works is the idea of making a virtual instrument. This world actually shows two strategies. One is a set of melodies and harmonies that changes over time, and a virtual instrument. So this is called dueling xylophones. There's actually three of them, you know, maybe a duel and a second. And each bar on the xylophones is one particular note. You know, it's on a log drum down at the bottom. It's a vibraphone and a little crystal clinky thing. And the balls have string melodies on them. All right, the string melodies are basically making, you know, sting in particular harmonies that go through a jazz chord sequence, you know, a 1-4, 2-5-1 type of thing. But it changes every 20 seconds or so. It'll sort of change the overall harmony that the melodies are playing on. And the melodies that the balls make by hitting the xylophones is pretty much kind of random, because there's a couple mutators in there. I don't know exactly how it's going to be. So this is the idea of kind of making a virtual instrument that gets played by the things going around. Yeah. Yeah. They do, because the size is directly determined by the mass, and the mass makes it gives you more attraction. So the larger one down below will have more attraction. That it's hitting them and what? Yeah, because the world is much more complex than that. It's not that if you have a big thing there, things will be attracted to it. And especially when we get in some of the quirks of the algorithm, that if it hits it, it tends to gain energy and shoot away. And if it hits a larger mass thing, it will tend to shoot farther. So the larger things will both attract them and send them away more. Well, this is another thing I didn't say, is that it's actually not strict gravity. You see things bounce off each other. I didn't actually implement collisions. What I did was I implemented gravity at the inverse square law and repulsion at the inverse cube law. So if it gets really close, the repulsion outweighs the attraction because it's cube instead of squared, and it looks like it shoots apart. So they look like they bounce off each other, even though I'm not actually implementing collisions. It would have been too expensive to do that and still be able to get enough flow there. Okay, let's spend a few minutes playing with the world and seeing how stuff works out. So let's look at the first world we showed. All right, you can see that moving around. I'll turn trails on so you can sort of see where it's going and what it looks like. And you can see them. You can see them rolling around each other. All right. They'll kind of go. They'll sort of orbit each other for a while. Spin back out. Gravity brings them back. Friction has a huge effect on it. Here, if we look at the world here, here's the declaration of the bodies. We have the friction up here. If we lower the friction, which is basically the amount I change the melody by each cycle, we get a very different behavior. So now they don't slow down so much. So now you see that they're going farther out rather than slowing down and being attracted by each other. And they'll end up bouncing off the edges of the universe. All right. If we increase their speed, their initial speed, we get another effect altogether. Now they make a beeline for the edge of the universe. And one thing I like when you have the trails on, you get these little artifacts of the bitlit operation, and you get really interesting little pictures out of it. All right, so they're going to take a while before they collide, so let's increase their mass. And then see what happens. One thing you can see in the trails is that they start to approach each other, their trails get a little curved. Let's put the friction back up a bit. Oops. Wrong world. Also speed the system up so it doesn't take so long for each one. Now they start to rotate around each other a little more, and we'll sort of get the convergence a little better. Now we can do something interesting. I think we're just about out of time. Like, let's move one of the worlds. So it's no longer symmetric. And then we'll see what happens. See how long it gets to retain any of its any of its symmetry. This is the kind of fun stuff you do when you play with a gravity simulator, is you just spend hours saying, okay, if I move this one over here, little teeny, teeny bits. All right. Now, these two started to interact in interesting ways. All right. I'm going to open up for questions. Is there... hey, Jake. the question was, have I considered a visual tool for laying out the initial conditions? I thought of doing that. Initially, I wanted to have it so that if you plunk down on it, it would put something there, and I made it so you can grab the rocks and move them. And then I thought, okay, then I'll save the result and do that. I found that for what I was doing, starting with this was kind of good enough. Other things I should say, this is written 100% Java. To make the music, I'm using the Java MIDI engine. I'm just using this straight Java synthesizer that comes with it. I wanted originally to hook this up to either Reason to drive it or Max MSP to make the sounds, but they were good enough with just the built-in sounds that I just kept going.
So, Simran, have you got this set up as like the world's greatest screensaver
yet? I want to do that.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure the world's greatest, because it'll make sound, and some people will be annoyed by that. But it's a project on Java.net. It's called Kepler's-Orrery. It's not a public project because it hasn't been approved yet. I just open sourced it this week. But if you're a member of Java.net, which is free, you can find it. I guess that's it. I'll answer questions off the mic.
Simran, that was incredibly, incredibly cool. Incredibly cool. Kepler's Orrery, generative music of the planets. I think that if I were going to say, I would say Pythagoras's music of the spheres. But it was absolutely beautiful.
This has been the Java.net Community Corner Podcast. Check out more mini talks from Java 1 2007 at today.java.net/pub/ct/Java 1 Community Corner, or subscribe to our feed with iTunes.